Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Glad you found us on the dial. Listen, if you're a radio station, if you're listening right now, your radio station occasionally preempts us for sporting events or what have you, you can always listen online. Go to MikeMalloy.com. There are several links there from several radio stations that stream the program in addition to our own streaming. Or you can subscribe, become a podcast subscriber. Costs you under $60 a year, which works out to 25 cents a program. So if you do have a radio station where we occasionally get preempted, or frequently get preempted, don't be a victim. You can listen online. Hey, aren't the Republicans having just one hell of a blast? I've never seen anything like this. I watched a little bit of the hearings today of the the Joint Economic Committee. I believe it was the House and the Senate. They had both their Joint Economic Committee who got together to consider financial regulatory reform and protecting the taxpayers and the economy. And yeah. And they had Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, there. And it's astonishing to see. It's astonishing to see. I know everybody has their opinion of Timothy Geithner. I don't like the way the Obama administration has handled this chaos that the Bush crime family, after 8 years of mismanagement, corruption, fraud, theft, murder, and mayhem, they handed it all off to Barack Obama. And it's been an enormous burden, obviously. Bush never paid any attention to anything. It was all run by Cheney. And Cheney's a sick old bastard who, has been alive for 700 years. So there's no telling how, what kind of worms and rats run around inside of him. But they handed Obama all of these crises. These are not problems that Obama's dealing with. They gave him two wars. They gave him a bailout to the banking industry signed by Bush. I don't know why nobody seems to remember that. They gave him an economy in such horrendous shape that auto dealers, banks, everything was collapsing. Now, okay, it was the bank's fault. Okay, it was the auto industry's fault. But 8 years of Bush, they tried to fix, correct, ameliorate, handle nothing. In fact, when Bush took over with nothing but a budget surpluses, as far as the eye could see, Bush did what a Republican rat bastard normally would do. Other than screw everything up and run hiding in the bushes and call for mommy, he issued a great big old tax cut, which destroyed everything that was put together during the 90s. Okay, fair enough. But now the Republicans, these swine, these corporate mouthpieces in the House and the Senate, I'll use Bush's vernacular, are playing like they care. They're playing like, hey, Mr. Geithner, how's it going to be unfixed everything? Hey, Mr. President, how's it going to be unfixed everything? Hey, Mr. Holder, why have you fixed it? These sons of bitches, these Republicans, whining about the economy, screeching about Obama's hesitation regarding Afghanistan, whimpering and moaning about closing Guantanamo and bringing people to the United States to stand trial. Crisis after crisis that they created. And these supercilious bastards sit there on these committees. And don't get me started about Joe Lieberman. Well, yeah, I told Dawson today, I don't know what to do about. They sit there and play like, to use Bush's term again, they didn't have anything to do with causing the problems. When in fact, the Republican Party that was in the majority for how many years destroyed everything, which was their plan. I mean, this is not advanced algebra, folks. This is basic math. The plan going all the way back to Reagan was to bankrupt the country, destroy everything, which meant that all the social services would have to stop, which is what's happening. And the wages would be depressed, which is what happening is what's happening. That the labor force would be reduced, which is what's happening. One of the things that capitalism has to feed on, in addition to families and decency, is excess labor. If there's no excess labor, capitalism gets to a point where all of a sudden they're paying competing wages. They have to compete with other companies because the labor pool is not as big as they'd like it. There isn't the huge surplus of labor. That's why in capitalist societies they consider 5% unemployed, which can be millions of people, to be full employment. Huh? How do you like that? So what the Bush crime family did during those years of corruption, fraud, death, destruction, lies, deceit, not only did they steal the country blind, not only did they get us into two illegal wars, not only did they set up the United States for the attack on September 11th, just on and on and on, all of which are actionable crimes that could have put or should have put practically everybody connected with the Bush crime family into prison for a long period of time. Not only that, but then they all scattered to the underbrush, as Republicans do, when the new sheriff came to town. And now the Republicans in the House and the Senate are just having a field day, blaming anyone they can in the Democratic Party for the crapola that they produced, for the horrendous mess. Every single problem that we are dealing with now comes from the 8 years of the Bush crime family. Every single problem. Now, if you want to put a fine point on it, say, well, Malloy, the Glass-Steagall Act was gutted by Bill Clinton. He signed it. Yes, that's true. And it was written by Republicans, and Bill Clinton's a Republican. Come on, get real. Wake up. Smell the coffee or the dung or whatever it is, the stench that Republicans are putting out. But to watch them on the electric TV, to watch some of this stuff is a little bit galling. We are going to just give you about 4 minute treat here when we come back from this first break. It is the hearing of the Joint Economic Committee today to consider this economic mess that we're in. And to hear the Republicans, we're only going to play one for you. Kevin Brady of Texas, Representative Kevin Brady of Texas. He likes to bill himself as one of the more thoughtful conservatives in Congress. That's a contradiction in terms. There's no such thing any longer as a thoughtful conservative. They are knee-jerk conservatives. They are reactionary conservatives. They are brain-dead conservatives. They are willfully ignorant conservatives. But there's no such thing as a thoughtful conservative. They don't exist. That's a figment of somebody's wild imagination. But Brady of Texas lit into Tim Geithner like an anaconda, telling the cabinet member that he should just go ahead and quit because his failures were reflecting badly on the president, as if this snaky rat bastard from Texas cares about Obama. This is a white man from Texas. All of a sudden, finding his inner Negro and just caring so much for Barack Obama. Well, Mr. Geithner, maybe you ought to resign. You're making the president look bad. Oh, Jesus. Well, it doesn't stop. I don't care what area of governance that you want to take a look at. The mess that was given to Barack Obama has implications that go way beyond his presidency. Whether he's in there for 4 years or 8 years is immaterial. These problems are not going to be solved. And eventually there's going to be an avalanche. Because we Americans are dumber than hog snot, there's going to be an avalanche of Republican votes like there was in 94, only it's going to be even worse. And we're going to have a Republican president, Republican vice president, Republican Congress, both houses. Huh? You think? And when that happens, well, then you will know that the grand experiment has finally come to an end. I want you to listen to Kevin Brady of Texas and Secretary Timothy Geithner, Treasury Secretary, when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You'd sell your kids into slavery if it was worth a dime. You'd bulldoze your own backyard and you'd come for mine. You're a nation of sheep led by a handful of pigs. Of sheep, that by a handful of hogs, and throw away your rights.
imagined yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, I want you to hear this one cut that I found rather interesting. Kevin Brady of Texas is the questioner, Representative Kevin Brady, and on the hot seat is Secretary of State, or Secretary of Treasury, Timothy Geithner. This is a hearing of the Joint Economic Committee, convened to consider financial regulatory reform, snicker, snicker, protecting the taxpayers, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and the economy, yawn.
Mr. Secretary, you are the point man on the economy. The buck, in effect, stops with you. For several months, conservatives on Capitol Hill have called for you to step down. Last night, Congressman Peter DeFazio said that there is a, quote, growing liberal consensus that Secretary Geithner should be removed. Quote, we need a new economic team. Conservatives agree that as point person, you failed. Liberals are growing in that consensus as well. Poll after poll shows the public has lost confidence in this this president's ability to handle the economy. For the sake of our jobs, will you step down from your post?
Congressman, it is a great privilege for me to serve this president, and I am very pleased at a chance to address the range of concerns you said. I agree with almost nothing in what you said, and I think almost nothing in what you said represents a fair and accurate perception of where this economy is today. Now, I think it's important to start. Welcome the advice that you're providing after you gave this president economy falling off the cliff, values of American savings cut almost in half, millions of Americans out of work. Again, the worst financial crisis we've seen in a generation.
Remind me, Mr. Secretary, what post were you holding when President Bush left office? Just remind me what economic post you were holding.
I was the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Great honor and privilege for me to serve at that time.
Does the Federal Reserve Bank have any oversight over the economy or any input into its performance?
The Federal Reserve, established by Congress, is responsible for trying to make sure that we keep inflation low and stable over time.
And are you shirking responsibility for the design of the bailout or its role?
No, absolutely. The actions that the Congress made possible, too late, but made possible last fall, were absolutely necessary to breaking the back of this financial panic. And without those actions and the actions the president put in place with the Congress, support of many people in the Congress, beginning this year, you would have an economy still falling, not growing. You would have had job loss still accelerating, not slowing. You would have had the value of America's savings still falling, not rising. You would have had confidence.
That's been changed.
But that's
created several quadrillion new jobs. Is that right?
Congressman, again, it's just a basic fact. A year ago, this economy was falling at the rate of 6% a year. We were losing between 500,000 and 750,000 jobs a month, and that process was accelerating, not slowing, until the President of the United States came and took office.
Mr. Now, Secretary, the public has lost all confidence in your ability to do the job, and it's reflecting on your president.
Congressman,
conservatives agree, liberal Democrats agree that it really is time for a fresh start, and I would urge you to consider
expired.
That.
Congressman, Chairwoman Miller, may I just respond to this? Congressman, if you look at any measure of consumer and investor confidence today, if you look at any measure of the strength and stability and health of the American economy, if you look at any measure of confidence in the financial system, it is substantially stronger today than when the President of the United States took office. And that happened not on its own. It happened because of a set of tough, difficult choices. And this economy did not come into this simply facing the worst financial crisis in generations. It came into this with almost a decade, certainly 8 years of basic neglect of basic public goods in health care, in education, in public infrastructure, in how we use energy. And fixing those problems is a central obligation of this Congress and this administration.
All of that to the millions of Americans who no longer have jobs because of your decision.
They would have had more jobs, there would have been more confidence, more employment in this country if we had not let this crisis get to the point that it did. And we would have had a stronger fiscal position if we'd have had 8 years of paying for our commitments, you not borrowing against them.
Then at some point. Expired.
Now, you know, regardless of your thoughts about Geithner, and mine are that his boss, Barack Obama, took absolutely the wrong course, but what do I know? Where it concerns rescuing the economy, it's still possible to do that, but what Obama's going to have to do is what we've talked about in this program many times. He's got to reach back to FDR and come up with a public works program that will pay decent wages and put a lot of people, a lot of companies to work, and innovative companies, new companies would be formed. I don't know why he's hesitating. But the thing that gets me about this, this snotty bastard from Texas, this Kevin Brady, why are these guys all the same? That laconic kind of sound to his voice, as though he just stepped off a spaceship from Arcturus and is going to criticize what he sees, all the debris of the economy of this country. And it's that snotty kind of patronizing attitude. You know, go tell that to 15 million employed workers. Well, you son of a bitch, why didn't you tell that to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney? Why didn't you tell it to yourself when you people were destroying every single aspect of American society? You can go pound sand up your ass as far as I'm concerned, Representative Kevin Brady of Texas. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn, with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle, or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. Before the hour, Representative Peter Hoekstra, Peter Trickster, or Peter Jokester, Peter Hoekstra from Michigan, Republican, another one of these crazy-ass Republicans, is trying to reanimate the ghost of Senator Joe McCarthy, the Wisconsin senator who got all his notoriety back in the 50s for insisting there were communists on under every bed in the administration, the Eisenhower administration, another Republican. There were communists in the State Department. There were communists in the military, according to Joe McCarthy. There were communists everywhere. You know, Joe McCarthy was a drunk and a freak and a weirdo and a Republican, but I repeat myself. And you know what happened to Joe McCarthy. Well, Representative Peter Hoekstra wants to be the new Joe McCarthy, only not communists. No, no, no. There are Muslim terrorists embedded in the U.S. State Department, in the U.S. military, in all sorts of government agencies. God knows they're probably in the EPA. They're probably in the Bureau of Weights and Standards, in the Bureau of Printing and Engraving. There are Muslims everywhere! This, of course, as a result of the shooting at Fort Hood, a tragedy, a catastrophe, one that could have been avoided if anybody had been paying attention, that Major Hassan was mentally unstable to begin with. Every religious person of his ilk, whether they're Jew, Gentile, Muslim, Christian, I don't care who it is, a fundamentalist religious person is like a cocked trigger, just waiting for somebody to bump the weapon and it goes off. Religiously insane people, I'll grant you, Peter Hoekstra, they're all over, but in the government, but they're mostly, if not all of them, are Christian. In the U.S. government, I don't think there are that many crazed Jews or crazed Muslims, but I will guarantee you that there are probably thousands, if not tens of thousands, of crazed Christians just waiting for the right moment. But all of a sudden, Peter Hoekstra says there are Muslim terrorists embedded everywhere. He knows it. He just knows it. And he wants to continue the investigation. Joe Lieberman, of course, when asked by the president specifically and the Justice Department, please hold off on your hearing. Please don't do this. Please don't grandstand. Please don't be a prick. Come on, Joe. For God's sake, let the investigation go forward first. And Lieberman, of course, I talked about this with Hadassah this morning when we were having breakfast. And, she said, what? Go ahead. You know, where were the Democrats when you got defeated in Connecticut? To hell with them, Joe. Go. All right. Just don't do it on Friday. Okay. Oh, my God. Lieberman and Hoekstra. From Prairie 2, the equity markets were down worldwide today, as were most commodities markets, except for gold. The dollar continues its slide, and China isn't happy because it's cheap dollars that have been driving the markets up. The markets are already overvalued, and this will either cause the mother of all market crashes or spark hyperinflation and then a crash. China, of course, has been manipulating its currency for decades and resents the United States doing the same thing. No, no, no. Obama's last stop in Asia was in South Korea, where he was very warmly received. He returned the warmth by promising to push for a free trade agreement between the U.S. and Korea. Obama's Secretary of Treasury appeared before the Joint Economic Committee of Congress today and was not warmly received. Liberal congressman won his resignation, and the Republicans smelling blood jumped on him, too, but he didn't hesitate to point out it was Republicans who were in charge when everything fell apart and that they were wrong about everything. All true, but Tim Geithner has a lot of explaining to do just the same. He has been up to his eyeballs in current practices of shoveling money to the Wall Street banks that are driving the market bubble. Money created out of thin air is flowing through the banks and into markets worldwide. The lone economic superpower in the world told President Obama how displeased it is about all this when he visited them last week with hat in hand. Congressman Barney Frank's new legislation will force all foreign exchange currency trading to go through a central clearinghouse, and that has the foreign exchange bankers all up in the air. They're warning that transparency and regulation will bring on the end of the world. The blood-sucking leeches prefer to keep the lights turned off. Obama is apparently trying to fix our problems with a just-print-money monetary policy. China has been eating our lunch with their monetary policy, but they also have a trade policy and a policy on manufacturing and an economic growth policy and a healthcare policy and a bunch of other policies that calls into sharp relief that we just have predatory corporations. The kind of criminals that are in charge here usually end up on the organ market in China. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Check it out. Tell him Mike sent you. He'll say, who? You got to be sitting down for this one. Do you remember Too Much Cappuccino Perino? She's got a job. She currently is the chief issues counselor for the United States at Burson Marsteller, an international public relations firm that, she's also a contributor to Fox News. she was just appointed to membership on the Broadcasting Board of Governors Wednesday evening, last night. The board governs all government-sponsored, non-military international broadcasting outlets like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia. Broadcasting Board of Governors is a 9-member bipartisan panel, and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, closeted Kentucky, urged the Obama administration to appoint Perino. It had to come from the Obama administration, and the Obama administration said, okay, yeah, we'll do it. We really liked Dana Perino. We'll give her a job in the Obama administration. We'll put her on the Board of Governors of the Broadcasting Board, and she can do things because we really like Dana Perino. And we really like giving psychopathic goddamn Republicans a job. Who lie, cheat, steal. Look, folks, hang up your spurs. You know, over the Christmas break that's coming up here, I think Kathy and I are going to rejigger this program and get completely away from politics. You know, we've been talking about it. We've been talking about it, because this is madness. I mean, for Christ's sake, the Obama administration gives Dana Perino a job? At the insistence of Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, closeted Kentucky? And that gives her a job.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll do that.
What's next?
Coming soon, the Malloy Cooking Hour with Mike and Kathy. How to brine a turkey in 20 minutes.
Yeah, well...
First, clean your
okay,
bucket.
Okay, all right, all right. I'm starting to question. You know, we sit here every night and do that. Now, don't send me emails and say, "Oh, don't do it, Mike." I'm just thinking out loud, and I shouldn't do that on this program for sure. But seriously, you know, the hottest tickets in town are to Sarah Palin book signings and Glenn Beck's Monster Mash on Fox News. I mean, Jesus God. That's where this country has come to roost. So, we just wonder. I hate to disappear, you know? Back in the day, when we used to watch television, before 90% of the listeners of this program were born, but you would turn off your television, you know, you'd be watching something, and the television would go off usually at 10 o'clock at night. And you had the screen on, it's black and white, and you'd turn it off. You have to get up and turn it off. Can you believe that? You would turn it off, and the picture would get smaller and smaller, and then go to a white dot. And then the dot would kind of, I'm not kidding, I'm not making this up. The dot would sit there in the middle of your screen, and then it would start to fade and fade. And when I was a kid with my brothers and sister and I, we used to sit there and see who could see the dot last. I can still see it. I can still see it. I see it. Oh, no, I see it. I see it. I see it. I see it. And the dot got smaller, smaller, smaller. Boop. It was gone. That's how I'm starting to feel on this program. I'm starting to feel like that dot. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to the point where... Everybody is giving the President of the United States some good advice on how to staunch the flow of blood from this economy. Very simply, with a Works Project Administration style program. There's so much work that needs to be done here. So many companies that could benefit. So many workers that could go to work. All, you know, Jesus, God. When the idea of single-payer health care is available right on the frontal lobes of very intelligent people in this country, when the idea of withdrawing our forces from Afghanistan makes perfect logic, and the Obama administration does nothing, but they do appoint Dana Perino? Okay. So I guess I'm going, I'm alone, just a little crazy. I said, I guess I'm going, I'm going, just a little crazy. With my wallet and my passport, a new pair of shoes.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. 10 before the hour. Now, Michael reminds me that Rachel Maddow has said about Burson Marsteller, the PR firm that Dana Perino works for now, when evil needs a PR firm, Burson Marsteller is on speed dial, which is very true. Do you know some of their clients? Burson Marsteller, the company from which Dana Perino has been plucked, that's plucked, and hired by the Obama administration. Well, they represented Blackwater USA following an incident which Blackwater employees killed 17 Iraqi civilians. What else have they done? After the Three Mile Island incident in 1979, Burson Marseller conducted a public relations work for the plant's manufacturers Babcock and Wilson, or Wilcox, regarding the government of Colombia. They did a lot of work with the government of Colombia trying to paint the dictatorship there as being just, you know, friendly democratic government. Regarding Nigeria, Burson Marseller went to work for them to cover up the fact that the Nigerian government was committing genocide in the breakaway province of Biafra. Remember that in the late 60s? Ah, you gotta be an old person to remember that. The children of Biafra, the little swollen bellies, and no, nobody remembers that. Romania, that's right. Burson Marsteller assisted Romania in gaining most favored nation status for trade with the United States. This is shortly after that, Nicolae Ceaușescu, who was the dictator of Romania, was overthrown, taken out behind a television station, I guess, and executed. Burson Marsteller helped Singapore develop a program to attract overseas investment shortly after its formation as a nation in the mid-60s, and also worked to cover up any human rights murders and violations Singapore committed. Argentina! Burson Marsteller organized a campaign against human rights organizations at the request of the last Argentine military dictatorship back in 76 to 83. You remember those people, right? Huh? Naomi Klein writes, by the way, in Shock Doctrine, The Shock Doctrine, Naomi Klein writes, Victor Emmanuel, the Burson Marsteller public relations executive who is in charge of selling the Argentine junta's new business-friendly regime to the outside world, told a researcher that violence was necessary to open up Argentina's, quote, protective status economy, end quote. He admitted later, no one invests in a country involved in a civil war. A lot of innocent people were probably killed. And Burson Marsteller's job was to cover all that up, of course. Saudi Arabia, another client. Yeah, it just goes on and on and on. So Rachel Maddow is right. When evil needs a PR firm, Burson Marsteller is on speed dial, right? And who hires her and puts her on a governing board of official U.S. broadcasting? The Obama administration. And you wonder why we're thinking about a cooking show? It won't just be cooking. We'll also do something. Can you do it on radio, Kathy? You know, modeling shows where we have or designer shows, not modeling, but designer.
You mean like Project Runway?
Like Project Runway.
The season finale is tonight. You know, I'm missing that
to do this.
Do this.
I know. Oh God, you sacrifice so much.
So much.
Yeah, you do.
It's my second favorite show after Curb Your Enthusiasm.
After Curb.
Well, third if you count Dog the Bounty Hunter. But yeah. I don't get to watch the dog as much as I used to. I don't know what happened to him. You know, someone emailed me that he's really short. Now this is what we should be doing.
Bounty Hunter is short. He's only about 5'6". Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. Well, he's 5'6" both ways.
Well, he looks really tall.
Well,
his wife's 5'6" two ways. Yeah,
well.
But this is what we'll do. Starting next week, it will be like, do you remember Dawn and Roma?
Oh, on WLS in Chicago?
Yeah, in the mornings.
Right.
A few people will know who those people are.
Right. He was just a crotchety old bastard, and she was a faux aging hippie.
I never saw rings and jewelry as large as
Didn't
that woman
Didn't she wear
wore.
Them? Oh, my God, she
and
wore
they
them.
Were compulsive hoarders. Now, this is great. We could be like the Kathy Griffiths of talk radio. We can just do celebrity gossip.
Celebrity
except
gossip?
Be our lives on the Z list, because we don't know anybody.
We don't know anybody. I know Tom Hartman.
That's true.
I know Tom Hartman.
Do you know anything about Tom Hartman? That other people don't?
No, but we could
but I
probably,
do know Don and Roma never threw anything away. They had the messiest office space. I
what
wonder
else
if you can even open that door.
No,
to
you
their
couldn't. What else can we
now?
Do? What else can we do? All right, we do. Let's do a Regis and Kathy kind of program here.
Right.
Only for the night people. Regis and Kathy.
You could still scream then.
Mike and Kathy.
Right.
Yeah, he screams. He screams about he woke up in the morning and couldn't find the red tie.
Where was it?
Where was my tie?
There it is. See,
I don't know where this
see,
is.
Boom. It's like Seinfeld. You got a show. There's a show.
That's it?
That's it. That's the
it.
Show.
Okay. All right.
We can
well,
pitch the show.
We can pitch
I'll be
it.
George. You be Jerry.
Okay. We can do that.
That's the show.
It'll be...
It's a show about nothing.
Because everything is about nothing. The center does not hold. Everything's collapsing. So, you know, let's get out of the way and watch it collapse.
Right.
I mean...
Anyone email me with a good, easy bread recipe because I want to make some homemade rolls for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so chicken fat. You like to use chicken fat.
No, beef fat. Lard. Lard. That's in biscuits. You can't make a good biscuit. You have to have two things.
Yeah.
Buttermilk.
Buttermilk.
Three things.
Yeah.
Buttermilk. Lard.
And a
actual
stove.
Actual lard.
You need a stove to an oven.
Stove. Yeah, for those people listening in Afghanistan, don't, you know, you got to have a stove. Buttermilk, lard, and white lily flour.
Yeah, those three things.
Has to be white lily.
Hey, listen, wake me when this is over tonight.
Okay.
Well, anyway,
Roma wore the largest jewelry.
Didn't she wear jewelry?
She was a big woman.
Well, she was tall.
She was tall.
Yeah, tall
she was
woman.
Slim.
Yeah.
But she was
and the
a,
scarves.
At just,
you know,
I never saw rings that could have their own zip code.
Well, the scarves covered up a lot of wrinkles. I need to start doing that. I'm sorry. Look at this. Look at these wrinkles on my neck. I think I'll start wearing the how do you say it?
Hermes scarf.
I don't know how to say those words, but we need to, let's talk about during the break here.
Scarves.
Let's turn off the mic.
I think they're having a sale at Macy's.
Yeah, turn off my mic.
When heartburn...
This is the Malloy Show. We're going to open up the lines early tonight if you'd like to participate. The number is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Just one more thing about Burton Marsteller, the company that is spitting Dana Perino out for Barack Obama to hire her and put her on this broadcasting board. Burton Marsteller, do you remember Mark Penn? Does the name Mark Penn mean anything to you? Think back to the Hillary Clinton campaign of 18 months ago. Mark Penn was her pollster and chief strategist. Mark Penn also was the CEO of Burton Marsteller. You see how small these circles really are? I mean, my God. All right. What else do we have here? Oh, yeah. You've heard of Cafe Press. Cafe Press that manufactures a lot of the souvenir crap that you will find on websites like radio talk show websites. I think we even talked with Cafe Press for a while about doing our T-shirts and stuff. God, I hope our business partners didn't sign up with them, because what I'm going to tell you now would mean that if we do have Cafe Press, we would have to fire them immediately. But you know those Psalm 109 scripture T-shirts that threaten Obama's life? The ones that say, pray for Obama, and then it says Psalm 109, verse 8. And when you go to Psalm 109, verse 8, of course, it advocates assassination, murder, turn the turned the king's wife into a widow and his children into orphans. And it's you know, just one more example of Christian Republicans, these sick sons of bitches that spew something like Sarah Palin or Glenn Beck onto the stage. But anyway, so when notified of all this, Cafe Press said, oh, my, well, maybe we better not do this. Maybe we shouldn't do this. Anyway, from the King James Version of the Bible, verse 8 says, let his days be few, and let another take his office. And verse 9 says, let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. So it's a death to the president kind of thing. It's on a T-shirt, and Cafe Press was printing these things for, you know, for anyone who wanted to buy them. And Cafe Press is a pretty big outfit now. Well, Cafe Press said that they were going to stop. But an email went out today to a bunch of folks who had complained about this to begin with. And Cafe Press first said, okay, we're going to stop. And then this email went out today. Person sent me this. I'll just say blank. Dear blank, thank you for contacting CafePress.com. Cafe Press looks at content on a case-by-case basis and makes decisions about what content is permissible based on our content usage policy. Anti-presidential gear has been a mainstay of Cafe Press since we were founded in 1999. And has become a key component of political discourse. Our site has become a cultural barometer of public opinion, and as such, designs often come into question. In managing our content, we are trying to protect self-expression while making sure we are not advocating violence. We initially pulled the Psalm 109, verse 8 content from our products today because broader media dialogue indicated that these designs potentially suggested violence toward the president. Based on current public discourse and further review of the actual content, we have determined that it is fair political commentary, and we are in the process of reinstating this merchandise. As with all of our content, these designs will continue to be reviewed, and if at any time their meaning is construed as advocating violence, we will revisit our decision. Best regards, so-and-so, so-and-so, content usage associate at cafepress.com. Son of a bitch. Can you believe that? We think that this is fair political content. You know, we kind of, sort of, maybe sometimes make sure we're not advocating violence, but this is different. This is different. So they're going to continue to print the T-shirts that say, pray for Obama, Psalm 109, verse 8. That says, and 9 says, let his days be few, and let another take his office. Let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow. We don't get our stuff from Cafe Press, do we, Kent? Oh, good. Thank God. Do we have stuff? We have T-shirts. We have all kinds of stuff, right?
Mike, this would be a wonderful time for us to suggest that truth seekers do their holiday shopping at MikeMalloy.com. Check on the merchandise page we have.
Is this how we start the new format?
Zazzle handles our
Zazzle. Okay. Well, see, and I don't mean to come across as a dumbass, but I don't do that stuff. You and John and Ron do all that stuff. I have no idea. I wouldn't know if we were selling swastikas.
Coffee mugs, T-shirts, bumper stickers. It's all available.
Yeah.
MikeMalloy.com.
Get yours today. Medallions or anything? Do we have any St. Christopher medals on the back that says, listen to the Mike Malloy Show? We don't have those?
Actually, that would be funny.
Huh?
We should have some iconography.
Any Stars of David?
We need some iconography.
You know, we need something.
And we can call it Mike-onography.
Mike-onography.
It's sacrilegious.
You know, that's why I married you. You were just so creative. All right, turn off your microphone, please. Thank you. All right. What do you want to do here? You want to take some phone calls?
Actually, I wanted to talk about knitting.
No, that's next week when we start, or after Christmas when you start the new.
We can do the knitting hour with Mike and Kathy.
No.
Worsted wool or nylon, acrylic? What's your preference?
All right, let's do some phone calls. All right, before you get too silly, and if there's anything we don't want on this program is to be silly, right? Okay, this is not the Stephanie Miller show, right?
Who?
Would that it were. Stephanie always has fun. Stephanie Miller and
Stephanie's
her crew.
Stephanie's wonderful.
Stephanie's a princess among knaves and swine. Princess Stephanie, every time I see her. And we may be getting together up in Minneapolis after the first of the year, I think.
Yeah, I not supposed to know about that?
Oh, God. I love hanging out with Stephanie. She just, she cracks me up. When I walk into a room and Stephanie Miller's there, and I say, hi, Stephanie, but I start laughing because all she has to do is look at me and I start laughing. I don't know. They're just, because I know she's going to say something funny. And she doesn't. You know, when she's not on her radio program, you know, she says stuff like, anybody in here got a Coke? How about a glass of water? Jesus! You know, it's not funny at all. But on her program, she's a hoop. I love Stephanie. Love her to death. What are we talking about?
Knitting?
Knitting, that's right. Okay. And Mark is in South Plainfield, New Jersey, listening on XM. Hey, Mark.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm looking forward to you doing audio food porn on the radio here.
Food porn? You know,
Nigella bites me.
You know, that's the truth. Kathy loves those cooking shows, especially the competitions, the death matches between these
Iron Chef.
Iron Chef, right. And, you know, sometimes when I come to bed and it's 1:30 in the morning and she's still watching the last few minutes of it, and it's like watching porn. It's like watching, Cinemax on a Friday night. These cooking porn shows. It's unbelievable. Is that it there, Mark?
What I was actually calling for is that, I've been a lifelong Democrat, and I've really gotten frustrated with the way the Democrats have been acting since they've got own everything here.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think the whole solution is to vote all the Republicans in and let them ruin this country, and then we all riot and take over the country.
Yeah, well, we had talked about that during the campaign, to just go ahead and let McCain and the hoe from Wasilla have the executive branch and watch what happens. But no, the people of the United States had to make one last-ditch effort to try to bring sanity back to our system and voted in Obama and Biden, and it's just staving off the inevitable. Hey, thanks a lot, Mark. We got a boogie. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
Everybody's waiting for the Messiah. The Jews are waiting. Christians are waiting. Also the Muslims. It's like everybody's waiting.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. As you know, the Senate health insurance reform plan says it will cover 94% of Americans. 94%. Whoa, wow, man. Well, Shred did some math. And the 6% that will not be covered, if the population in the U.S. right now is 307,973,991, 6% of that is 18,478,439. So 18.5 million Americans will just have to do without health insurance. Jesus Christ. Aren't you sick of it? I mean, aren't you sick of it? Aren't you sick of it? And this could have been solved so simply. There would have been a transition period. It might have taken a year, 18 months to put it into effect. If we were a representative democracy, which we are not, we are a corporatocracy now. But if we were still a representative democracy, all Obama would have had to have done is just say, okay, we're going to do, to simplify it, Americans, because you all are not very bright. So to simplify it, here's what we're going to do. Medicare for everybody. That's all. Just Medicare for everybody. For the time being, which means you're going to have to pay 20%. And we're going to charge everybody, maybe $110 a month. for your coverage. And if you can't even afford that, then we're going to just, you know, we will subsidize you. And nobody will know the difference. The only, you know, if you go to a health care provider, or if you are, you know, playing poker with your friends and your Medicare card slips out, nobody will know that you're on the dole, that you're getting yours for nothing. Everybody else is paying $110 a month. And then very slowly phase that out and phase in Medicare 2, which simply says if you want preventive medicine in this country, or curative medicine in this country, or how to stop smoking, or how to lose weight, or how to bring down your blood pressure, or an exercise program, there's your card. Go to a physician or a physical therapist or a naturopath or a massage therapist or somebody who will show you the proper way to lift weights and the proper way to go for walks and so on and so forth. And hey, aren't we healthy? This whole healthcare insurance reform thing is making me sick. Isn't it you? Isn't it making you sick? Aren't you sick of this? Aren't you tired of it? You know, you knew it was going to fail when Obama says, well, we're not going to do the Clinton thing, where it's top down, where it comes out of the executive branch with a little old coterie of people who are going to work with, like they did with Hillary, and come up with something and then present it to Congress. And it's, 7 million pages deep and nobody can figure out what it is, and it dies. No, we're not going to do that. Mm-mm. We're going to hand it off to the Congress. We're going to let the House of Representatives come up with their version and the Senate come up with their version. And then, you know, just like we do with all bills, then we'll get together for a hearing on how to meld these two concepts together. The joint commissions, the joint, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that way, Obama in his wildest dreams was really thinking, and that way it will come from the people. What? Mr. Obama, what people? The people who run pharmaceutical industrial complex, the medical industrial complex, the hospital industrial complex, the medical device industrial complex, those people, because those are the ones who wrote the bill. And it sucks, Mr. President. This piece of legislation, it sounds like something that would come from a Republican administration. It's garbage. It's garbage. And not because these filthy... See, it didn't have to be garbage. That's the point. You know, I'm not getting in the president's case. He didn't do anything. Except suggest that these knaves, thieves, liars, skunks, scum that operate in the U.S. House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans, with some exceptions on the Democratic side, that they would come up with something that would cover all Americans, that would be logical, sensible, it would get the job done. That was Obama's mistake. He didn't write this garbage. This garbage was written by those industries, those corporations that want you sick. Jesus Christ, of course they want you sick, only not right now. They want all your money first. And then when you get sick, they'll find something from 23 years earlier when you first applied for health insurance. Oh, well, you didn't tell us that you had a planter's wart on your heel. Well, then, we're not going to cover your cancer treatment. But they're not connected. Oh, yes, they are. It's dead, Mr. President. Just, you know, pack up your marbles and jacks and just call it a day. You know, maybe some other time. Maybe 20 or 30 years from now when we have, never mind. We're never going to have. After this president, there's never again. You know this. Come on. I'm not sitting here being negative. After this president, there's never again going to be another Democratic president. It's not going to happen. Because the next Republican president, which will happen after Barack Obama's presidency is over, whether it's 4 years or 8 years, the next Republican president and Republican House and Senate will so totally destroy what's left of the Constitution that we will become finally a one-party corporatocracy.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Just briefly on a lighter note, perhaps y'all could have a show called All Things Camo. Be appropriate for your part of the world and for mine,
yeah.
Texas, for that matter. I mean, you've got Georgia, Alabama, and Florida right there.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, we could do that. But you know what? I don't think we will. But
The ratings in Austin probably wouldn't be that good.
Yeah, probably not.
Texas, definitely.
Yeah.
Healthcare. Man, healthcare, it's kind of like, you know, going to the state fair and they sell those little tickets on those huge rolls of 10, you know, about 1,000 of them or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to have so many tickets to ride a particular ride.
Right.
You know, one or two tickets get you the...
Unless you get a wristband.
Yeah, well, now it's wristbands, right.
Right.
But you always had to, for the really good rides, you always had to save up a bunch of tickets. You finally get by or, you know, win enough tickets, and you go to that ride, say, okay, here's my ticket. And say, oh, gee, I'm sorry. The ride's been shut down. It's under maintenance,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Right,
kind of
right.
Like the healthcare thing that they're proposing here. Yeah, we're going to sell you a lot of tickets, but we're still not going to guarantee the ride's going to be running.
It's just astonishing. Just like the listener that sent in that number for me, 16.5 million people, which apparently is acceptable collateral damage. It's just like when you fire a drone missile into a wedding party in Afghanistan or Pakistan, you know, we'll get the bad guy, but we'll get 19 of his relatives too, including 6 of his nieces and nephews under the age of 7. It's just collateral damage. Well, the new healthcare plan put together by corporate America. I'm not going to say Obama. You know, he didn't do it. It was corporate America working through their whores in, no offense to sex workers, in the House and the Senate. So what we have is something that, okay, we'll cover 94% of you. Now, you know, the other 6%, the other 16.5 million. Well, I don't know what to tell you, but. Goodbye, you know. So
yeah.
Just like the whoever said the Republican plan was it? Who was it said the Republican plan is don't get sick, and if you do, die quickly.
Yeah, take two aspirin and call us in 4 years.
Right.
Yeah, it's I don't know how the state legislature is in Georgia, but in Texas they meet every 2 years, and I've always thought that well, God, it's a big state, big budget. You know, they really should meet more often.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm reconsidering that. Maybe they should meet like every 5 or 6 years.
I mean,
when we have folks like Brady, you were talking about earlier, and
mm-hmm.
Diatribe. Oh God.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis Gohmert. Oh, there's a winner.
Who's he? Is he another
he,
Texas representative?
Yeah.
He's oh, is
the
it?
One
okay.
with the extremely recessive hairline that goes on and makes just outrageous monologues.
Yeah. Oh well.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, look to the southern part of the state with Lloyd Doggett here in Austin, Texas, who doesn't get any press. He quietly presses on, a good Democrat.
Yeah.
And our Hispanic brothers to the south who are slowly inching their way northward in this fair state.
Right. Well, good luck. All right, Steve.
You take care.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. You too. Progressive Review. .com, ProRev.com. Sam Smith writing there a couple days ago about it's a brief guide to avoiding socialism. Sam just mentions last May the Republican National Committee condemned Obama and the Democratic Congress for leading America toward socialism. And since then, the line's been picked up by numerous others on the right, including the teabaggers. And he goes on. He says, well, all the talk about socialism got me thinking about what avoiding socialism in America would truly be about. What if we set out to rid ourselves of all the intrusions of this purported political curse, you know, socialism? Let's get rid of it. And then Sam says, here are things we might do, a few things we might do. First of all, return to the old system of firefighting in which blazes were handled by private fire brigades hired by private insurance companies. Brooke Harrington describes that practice in economic sociology. It says, quote, if you wanted a fire brigade to come to your aid in emergencies, you had to join a kind of club with private membership fees. Work like this. You ponied up the fee. The club gave you a plaque to put over your front door. And then if fire swept through the neighborhood, the club dispatched help, but they only assisted paying members. So if you didn't have that plaque over your door, the fire rescue teams would pass you right on by, would not be uncommon to find that your house burned down while the one next door would be saved. Sounds a little bit like our health insurance system, right? All right, so get rid of that. End public education. Public schools, which strongly aided the growth of America, are about as socialistic as you can get. Obama, it should be noted, is trying to help reduce this deleterious influence by converting public schools into profit-making charter operations, right? Close down all federal highways and sell them off to the highest bidder so they can turn them into profit-making roads using tolls. Isn't the Indiana Turnpike in the hands of foreign investors now? I think so. Abolish Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, and all other such welfare programs. Yeah, that's, they've been, right-wingers have been pushing that for a long time. And all government interference with the banking and financial industries. This would have recently saved us hundreds of billions of bailout funds and all veterans programs, including let's close all the veterans hospitals. That's nothing but pure socialism. Huh? How about you right wing veterans, you veterans, you soldiers that like to vote for Republicans and you military families? Huh? How about this? You want the end of socialism? OK. And all veterans programs. How about selling off all public transportation to unregulated private interests? No more bus companies, no more private train companies, no more private airlines, nothing. Just get rid of it all and sell it to unregulated private interests. Close all public hospitals and end public subsidies to other hospitals and privatize all ambulance service. Ah, no more 911. Now, if you know, if your husband or your wife is choking to death because he or she is having a massive coronary, that is survivable if you get to the hospital within 30 minutes. But, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? It's easy to remember 911. But if you have to remember, 404-555-6797, and you dial it, oh, they're closed. Goddamn, it's after 5 o'clock. All right. Then you have to find one after, you know, it has late hours. Well, you know how it goes. And all government regulation of food or health products. That's pure socialism. You don't need that. If enough people die from eating a certain product, then other people will notice, and that's it. Who, excuse me, as was written in The Jungle, the book that came out in the turn of the last century, around that time, you know, was the forerunner to a Food and Drug Administration. And in the book, the author, Sinclair, I got a cough, excuse me. The author, Upton Sinclair, pointed out, among other things, of people falling into vats that were making sausage. And, you know, just, well, what are you going to do? You know, you've got that huge glop of stuff. And the practice of government plowing streets after a snowstorm. As Boston Mayor James Curley put it once, the Lord brought it, let the Lord take it away. We're just about finished here. This is how to get rid of all the nasty socialism. So as Sam Smith says there, feeling better yet? Bet you never realized what a bunch of closet socialists we are. And we got there, though, because instead of hurling theories and cliches at each other, we decided on a case-by-case basis who could do a particular job best. And the funny thing is, that system worked pretty well. People who complain about the threat of socialism remind me of the man from Virginia who went to college on the GI Bill and bought his first house with a VA loan. When a hurricane struck, he got federal disaster aid. When he got sick, he was treated at a veterans hospital. When he was laid off, he received unemployment insurance and then got an SBA loan to start his own business. His bank funds were protected under federal deposit insurance laws. When he retired, he went on Social Security and Medicare. The other day, he got into his car, drove the federal interstate to the railroad station, parked in the public lot, took Amtrak to Washington, and went to Capitol Hill to ask his congressman to get the government off his ass. You right-wingers are insane. You really are. What a bunch of chowderheads, knuckle butts, and anything else I can think to call you. It's astonishing, though, right? Huh? Oh, remember last summer during the teabaggers, all these psychopathic white people who were out there dancing around on their own graves. Remember all that? We don't want socialism and the pictures of Barack Obama looking like Hitler and so on and so forth. Any one of those sons of bitches probably involves himself or herself in at least 5, 6, 7, or 10 programs that would be considered and are socialist. But if you point that out to them, you see, they can rationalize every one of them away. I like the people who said, you know, they wanted the government to keep their goddamn hands off Medicare. You know, those are my favorites. Those are my favorites. Sam Smith writing at Progressive Review, or online, it's prorev.com. Stick around. We'll take your calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Sale from Saturn is here, the best deals ever on a Saturn, with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle, or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It is about 9 before the hour. Kathy in Green Bay says, what about having one of Ralph Nader's groups write the health care ideas? Sure. Like Dr. Sidney Wolf, who is with Public Citizen. Right? We have one of his books here about good drugs, bad drugs, that was put out by the Nader Organization, which is an amazing book. It's been around for a number of years, and I think it's been updated recently. Good drugs, bad drugs. If you don't have a copy of it, you should have it in your house if you take any sort of pharmaceuticals. Yeah, Dr. Sidney Wolf could have impaneled a group of experts from the pro-consumer, pro-citizen, pro-common interest kind of perspective, right? And could have come up with something using Medicare. The only requirement would have been for Dr. Wolf to use Medicare as the model, had to stick as closely to Medicare as possible for this new healthcare plan. Wouldn't that have been fairly simple? And then just say, okay, Sid, you have 6 months. We'll see you when you have finished. Oh, and by the way, keep it as brief as you can. You know what Sidney Wolf would have come up with in terms of a paper? And I would be willing to stake my radio career on this. Dr. Sidney Wolf would come up with a document that at most would be 4 pages long. I mean, what else have you got to say? What else is there to say about national health care? Nothing. So, for some reason, Barack Obama didn't decide to go that way. He decided instead to turn this whole process over to a bunch of garbage heads that cannot and will not respond to the public interest. They respond to corporate interests. Come on, this is not cliche anymore. This is not the screechings of some, you know, liberal someplace in the wilderness saying, well, it's all corporatist. It is. I mean, Jesus God, take a look at it. Take a look at the whole thing. Who do you suppose wrote these amendments and bills and nooks and crannies and paragraphs and subchapters and vidum? Who do you suppose wrote that stuff? Members of Congress? You know better. William is in Tenston. Is it Tenston, North Carolina?
Kinston.
Oh, yeah. All right. I know where that's outside of Raleigh, isn't it?
East of Raleigh.
Yeah, east of Raleigh.
As a matter of fact, we're so far east of Raleigh that they think we're 3 days behind on the news.
I spent a month.
The News and Observer says that anyway.
Yeah, I spent a month one night in Kinston.
Kinston?
Yeah.
Well, it's a friendly little town.
Yeah, it is. A good little town. Good little town.
I just took a you go off at 11 o'clock, I reckon, don't you?
Midnight.
Midnight?
Yeah.
I didn't know that long.
Eastern time, midnight.
I just took a 3-hour drive, and I listened to both the right and the left.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody seems entrenched, to say the least.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And I don't know how we're going to live in the same country.
Well, we're not. I don't think we are. I think those days are gone. I mean,
there's no middle ground.
I can't think of any. Can you? All right, let me ask you. You're a conservative, right? What would you be?
I don't know if I'm a conservative or not. I hate labels.
Well, if you live in
But I look for middle ground whenever I can find it with somebody. Whenever I discuss anything with anybody, I first look to see if there's anything we can agree on.
All right.
You and I are members of the human race, I think.
Well, maybe. Is there anything that? Well, let me rephrase it.
I was going to ask you.
What would you be willing to compromise where it concerns health care? Me, I would like to see Medicare for everybody, like your mom and daddy are on.
Okay. Well, let me say it this way. I have an appointment in 2 weeks with a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Whose business is it but mine and his?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, well, but you see, you right-wingers don't want to do that for women.
Label me a right-winger.
Well, I'm just guessing. The right-wingers then don't want to grant that same thing that you want to a woman seeking an abortion.
I don't care.
All right, well, what makes, you know, who's challenging the privacy of what happens between you and your doctor? Who said anything about that?
They're presently writing rules, as regarding the kind of treatment I can receive, regarding the kind of payment he can receive.
Well, now, wait a minute. Where'd you hear all this? Have you read?
It's already a case in the case.
Have you read the House version and the Senate version? None of this is coming from Barack Obama, you know. This is coming out of the House, and it's coming out of the Senate. The Senate just completed their version today.
Well, let me ask my question again. I've got an appointment with my doctor.
Yeah.
And whose business is it but mine and his?
Well, it's nobody's business but yours and his. I mean, who's saying otherwise? Are your parents living?
No, they're not.
All right. Are you married? If so, are your wife's parents? Is there anybody in your family that's on Medicare? Are you on Medicare? Do you know anybody's on Medicare?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is their business public?
The fact that we have a Medicare program still does not answer the question.
Well, no, wait.
Maybe we shouldn't have Medicare.
Well, that's true. Maybe we shouldn't. All right, thanks, William. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. We have an open line here if you want to call in. The number is 877-996-2556. Perry, too, says, yeah, go ahead, end socialism. That works for Goldman Sachs. He writes, but Mike, if we ended the socialist government programs, we'd have all that money. After all, we don't need the government to print the money. A private company does it now, the Fed, and it works out so well. Goldman Sachs has all the privately printed money it needs to speculate in the private oil market. Remember $4 gas and all the other things where they make so much money by doing free market, unregulated capitalism. Yeah, I'm always shocked. I don't know why, but I'm always shocked at the mind-scrambling ignorance of so many of our fellow countrymen and women where it concerns capitalism or socialism, which one would be more amenable to the success of their family, the life of their children, the future of their grandchildren, you know. And if you try to say, look, democratic socialism, we're not talking about totalitarian socialism. That sucks as much as capitalism sucks. We're not talking about the Cuban model. We're not talking about the Russian model. We're not talking about the Chinese model. We're talking about democratic socialism as practiced, in the Scandinavian states to a greater or lesser degree in various European states. And they seem to do quite well. That's what we're talking about. That's all. And we're only talking about socialism where it concerns four or five industries, and the rest, go ahead and play, boys. Open up your businesses. Just play by the rules. If you don't play by the rules, if you try to cheat, lie, steal, commit fraud, rob the taxpayer, do bad things to stakeholders. I still call them stockholders. But, you know, if you do any of that bad stuff, we shut you down. And you don't open up another business. It's very simple. You know, if this were China and you cheated, like somebody said in the email tonight, you'd wind up on the Oregon market. But it's not China, it's the United States. So, you know, we're going to nationalize 5 major industries that are, that are critical to the survival and well-being of Americans. And the rest of it, go ahead, play. Do whatever you want to do. Just remember, there are limits to growth. There really are. And if you don't understand that, then maybe you need to sit down and take a seminar on the fact that when there are no limits to growth, there's a name for that. Cancer. So just keep that in mind when you open up your business. You want to hire 25 employees, 50 employees, 100 employees? Okay. Cancer, cancer, cancer. Unlimited growth. Too big to fail. Yeah, when it's too big to fail and you're doing chemo and you realize, oh, Jesus, you know, okay, I guess I'm going to die. Cancer's too big to fail, right? And unregulated capitalism craziness is too big to fail. So I honestly believe that the best solutions are usually the simplest. I really do. You know, what is that? Occam's razor or something like that? But really, presenting somebody with a health insurance, let's call it what it is. Come on, Mike. A health insurance reform plan that is 1,000 pages, 1,500 pages long, that has all these whereases and wherefores. Like I said, Dr. Sidney Wolf would do it in 3 pages, 4 pages max. Okay, maybe 5 if he'd had a drink the night before. But that's it. That's it. What are all those pages for? You know, all these goddamn bastards in the House and the Senate add the pages. They're the ones that add the pages. They're writing the rules. And where do the pages come from? It doesn't come from the representatives or the senators. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They say to their staffers, okay, get out there with the people that brought us here. Go get some information about this from the health industrial complex. Go. And the little boogers come back in, the little gophers, the staffers, the Senate and House staffers come trotting back in with page after page after page of stuff that the health in industrial industry and all its various and mutated forms wants included. And the end result is 1,500 pages of gibberish. Those 1,500 pages have not a damn thing to do with the American citizen, where it concerns health care reform. It has to do with the American corporation, where it concerns health care reform. That's all. Come on, you know this. Don't be a dumbass. Come on, even you right-wingers, even if they're in Kinston, North Carolina, don't be a dumbass. Don't think for a moment that the members of the House and the Senate have come up with two separate plans that are really concerned with your issues or my issues. They have not. They've come up with a health care, a health insurance reform plan that satisfies, to greater or lesser degrees, only the health industrial industry or health industrial complex. That's it. You know, health insurance reform? Well, who do you think? Now, come on, get real just for a couple of minutes. I know this is hard. It's hard for me, too, to get real for any length of time during any given day if I'm talking about anything that has to do with how this society works. But let's pretend for a minute, okay? If laws are going to be written about the health insurance industry, who? Come on now, be real. Just for a minute, you can go back to being not real. Who do you think is going to write those rules in corporatized America, 2009? Who do you think is going to write those rules? Quick, no peeking. That's right. Hey, you got it. It's not going to be you, and it's not going to be me, and it's not going to be the family down the street. It's going to be the health insurance industry. They write the rules. Only they do it in a kind of a... Like the drone aircraft that wipe out people at weddings because they're looking for somebody. That's how the health insurance industry works. You know, you never see their fingerprints. You don't see anything. You see somebody like these members of Congress, the House and the Senate. You see them doing the work. You think, oh, my, look, the senators and representatives are all hard at work. Oh, they're writing health insurance review. Wait a minute, what's all this stuff? Wait, what's all this? Holy Christ, what's this? Oh, my God. And you start to drown if you even attempt to read what they put together. Who's writing that? Come on now. You can go back we'll all go back hand in hand to the unreal world here in just a second. But just for a moment, who writes, who has written this health insurance reform legislation that the teabaggers and the nutballs who follow the suicider on Fox News swear is being written by a communist born in Kenya? You know, who really is writing it? Come on. So, I say, trash it. Trash the whole thing. Trash the whole thing. If we continue to trash these ideas and just let them go, eventually the people will have enough, and eventually the people will rise up. They will, eventually. The problem with that is that we have become so militarized internally. Our police departments, our law enforcement people have become so militarized that the uprising is eagerly anticipated by corporatized America, because the uprising can then, you know, it's like, okay, let's just get this done. You know, it's like having your arteries reamed out a little bit, you know, and a stent put in. You know, all right, let's just get this done. That's what corporate America wants. They want us to rise up so they can just break it quickly. You know, gun down, maybe. I don't know what it would take in this country to stop an insurrection. Probably 6, 7, 8, 10,000 people dead. That's it. Party's over. You know, it's not going to be the Civil War, 600,000 dead. It's not going to be anything like that. You know, 2,000 dead Americans on the streets, and it will stop. And martial law will be imposed, and everything's okay. Then corporate America takes over, restores order, and everything gets back to the way it was in England in the 15th century. I'm sorry, the 11th century. And then everything's fine. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. Past the hour, the Daily Democrat in a newspaper in Woodland, California, is reporting that the Yolo County Sheriff's Department, this is about an hour ago, arrested dozens of University of California Davis students after they staged a sit-in for over 2 hours inside the campus's administration building. They're in protest of a 32% tuition hike in poor California. Hundreds more students showed their support outside. And the crowd multiplied as students were notified via Facebook, Twitter, text message, and word of mouth. Four police agencies responded to the protests, complete with riot gear and a mobile detention center. Protests began around 10 a.m., that would be Pacific time, when a small group marched through lecture halls to bolster support. 50 students remained inside the building when the doors were locked, but a few students trickled out as the night progressed. Protesters on both sides of the door chanted and paraded signs that read, "Chop from the top," and "Education is a right." A large banner featured a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson saying, "The secret of education lies in the respect of the students." University Police Lieutenant Matthew Carmichael said around 5:30 p.m., 8:30 Eastern, "They are officially trespassing now." Police asked the student to leave and told them those who failed to comply would be arrested. Students not interested in a criminal record began leaving the building. Oh, that's kind of a snotty comment, isn't it? Around 5:15 p.m. People were handcuffed, taken from the building one by one, beginning around 7:15 p.m. California time. That would be about an hour ago. It was not known by deadline of this newspaper how many students were arrested. I saw some of this on the Electric Television tonight. In California, all over the state, students who simply this means their education careers stop, like, you know, a car hitting a brick wall, increasing tuition and fees by a third, just boom. I mean, that's it. If it was costing you $5,000 to go to school, it will now cost you close to $7,000. If it was costing you $10,000, it'll now cost you close to $14,000. And do students have any recourse for this? No, of course not. Quit school. Just get out. Regarding the caller from Kinston, North Carolina, William Gordon in Oklahoma City writes, "Mike, I bet William doesn't know or can't remember that he signs a release of information form with his physician with each visit." Yeah, what Gordon's writing about, William said, well, you know, if I go sit down, my doctor's private. And, you know, why bother saying no, it isn't? But, you know, what the hell? So anyway, Gordon goes on, "Whenever his claim and supporting documentation as a diagnosis is filed with his insurance company, assuming he has insurance, that information will be forwarded by his insurance carrier to a huge data bank, much the same as a creditor reports a person's credit history to a credit reporting agency. Insurance companies have all of our medical history at their fingertips. Yours, Kathy's, mine, and William's." Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, that's the thing that is just another thing is astonishing to me is that there's anybody left in this country, and they're all on the right. They're all the conservatives or... I'm not a conservative. Yes, you are. It's all on the right. All these people on the right who honestly believe anything is private. William, let me tell you something if you're still listening. When you fart, somebody knows about it. Okay? When you go to the store and buy Rolaids, somebody knows about it. If you go buy a copy of Catcher in the Rye, it goes into a data bank. And the Secret Service knows that you bought a copy of Catcher in the Rye. Are you aware of that? William? William? William! We have a break here? Yeah, we do. Okay. Yeah, this is kind of interesting. Michael in Roswell sent me something about a poll, new public policy poll. that pretty much defines who the teabaggers are. It's from Talking Points Memo, and I'll share that with you when we come back. All right? And if you're online, stay on the phone, stay there. I mean, you know, on the phone, not online. If you're on the line to this program, we have an open line or two if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy. Stick around. Saturn is here, the best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle, or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models, length of contracts limited, take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It is 24 before the hour. public policy polling has a new poll out. Pretty much defines who the teabaggers are. This is from Talking Points Memo via Michael and Roswell. The poll asks this question. Do you think that Barack Obama legitimately won the presidential election last year, or do you think that Acorn stole it for him? The overall top line is legitimately won, 62%. Acorn stole it, 26%. Now, that's everybody. Among Republicans, however, only 27% say Obama actually won the presidency last year, with 52%, an outright majority, saying that Acorn stole it, and 21% are undecided. Among McCain voters, the breakdown is 31% say Obama actually won the race, 49% say that Acorn stole it, and 20% are not sure. Independents, when they are asked these same questions, 72% of independents say Obama won legitimately, 18% say Acorn stole it, 10% are all confused. Democrats, 86% say Obama won it outright, 9% of Democrats. Jesus Christ. 9%, almost 1 in 10 say, oh, well, Acorn. And 4% of Democrats couldn't find their ass with both hands, and they say, oh, I don't know. So as Michael writes, excuse me, once again, polling shows that there's a core 25% of voters who are completely out of touch with reality. And yet it's this bottom quarter to whom the news media pander. As Richard Feynman said at the O-rings during the Challenger accident hearings, quote, I think this has some bearing on our problem, end quote. You know who Richard Feynman was. He was one of the bomb builders, the A-bomb. But he also was assigned to investigate the Challenger explosion that took the lives of the astronauts. And he said, regarding the O-ring failure, I think this has some bearing on our problem. No irony there, right? All right, let's go back to phone calls here. Dave is in Harrisburg, PA, listening on XM. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
I wanted to comment on Williams. No one's between him and his doctor.
Oh, yeah, the guy that called from Kinston, North Carolina. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, when his policy gets to $1,000,001,
yeah,
there's going to be somebody between him and his doctor. Because he'll reach his limit. Also, earlier you were talking about socialism. I thought it was kind of interesting. Don't we pay for a lot of offices for these government officials? If that's socialism so terrible, we shouldn't be paying for them at all. We'll just go to a direct vote for everything.
Yeah, well, might as well, even though direct vote for everything means that we descend into chaos.
We'd have to actually have an informed, population.
And that's not going to happen.
No, it's far too much to read anything. I get really frustrated when we hear these things because I just don't know where we're going to go.
I don't either. And the more I try to clarify that just for me, for my own self, where are we heading? It worries the hell out of me because I think we're heading, really heading, if we're not already there, into a fascist state. And a lot of people who are much brighter than I and have much more education and much more ability to articulate these things have written just exactly that we are there. We are so close. The only thing separating us from a totally corporatist state is that we still maintain the fiction of two political parties. But aside from that, those two political parties do the bidding of corporate America always, without question, always.
Well, the nice thing about that, Mike, for us, is that if there is ever a rising, Blackwater will send us a bill after they put us down. We'll be sure to pay for the people we kill.
That's probably true. All right. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Malloy's Democratic Socialism simply says this: nationalize, that means ownership belongs to us, the people. Nationalize these five industries: banking / financial services, just put it back in the hands of, or put it into the hands of the people. Nationalize it, socialize it. Energy production, energy distribution. Healthcare, obviously. Transportation, obviously. And weapons production. And get it out of the hands of private enterprise. And the goal, of course, is to end weapons production altogether. That'll take a little time, but do that. Now, beyond that, and again, this is not totalitarian socialism, which is what the teabaggers and Glenn Beck and Hannity and the rest of these punk asses, this is what they reference always when they're talking about socialism, unless they talk about national socialism, which was fascism, which they don't understand. But anyway, I'm not talking about totalitarian or dictatorial socialism. I'm talking about democratic socialism. That's all. Just democratic socialism. And then with the nationalization of those five industries, everything else is, small businesses, family-owned farms, high-tech firms, all sorts of startup businesses are left alone as long as labor and environmental laws are followed and they don't get too big to fail. Because when they get too big to fail, then they become socialist on the downside anyway. Only when the profits start flowing again, we, the people who bailed them out, just stand there with our thumbs up our noses and wonder, what are we doing with 10.5% Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment when it's actually more about 20%? Here we sit in a country with 20% unemployment, and these rapacious, murderous sons of bitches at Goldman Sachs have set aside $23 billion to pay off in bonuses again this year? Oh, please. And we're going to sit on our asses and let that happen, aren't we? Yeah, we are. We're going to let that happen. Nobody in this country is going to approach Goldman Sachs, unless it was Michael Moore with a camera. Nobody is going to approach Goldman Sachs and say, you fascist rat bastards, and grab them by their shirt collars and drag them out of their offices and, you know, just toss them in the street and burn the building down. Nobody's going to do that because fascism prohibits you from doing that. And, well, back up. American inertness. Inactivity prevents that. We would rather, apparently, sit with our almost 20% unemployment, the entire university of system in California collapsing, and you can look at other university systems also and find the same thing. Healthcare for children down the toilet. Law enforcement. Emergency services, everything kind of tilting, and Goldman Sachs will pay its employees $23 billion for doing what? What did those sons of bitches produce? Somebody tell me. What did Goldman Sachs, don't say profit, what did Goldman Sachs produce? What tangible object did they produce in the last year, in the last 10 years, 30 years, 50, 100 years? What has Goldman Sachs produced? So here we are. And there we go. Bob is in Tennessee. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
You're good. Good show tonight, Mike.
Thanks.
You're good. How am I? I'm tired of living in a half a loaf country.
Yeah.
Hey, let me tell you, I've got something here that'll nail your ears back. But first, I want to tell you what I thought of while I was on the phone.
Yeah.
You have a right-winger, you have a moderate, and you have a socialist.
Right.
Okay? And if any two of these meet, and one of them's got a dirty glass of water and the other one's got a clean glass of water, the right-winger says, I'll take the clean glass of water, you drink the dirty glass of water. The moderate says, oh, I'm a nice liberal, I'm a compassionate conservative. Here, we'll mix the two together. That's called a compromise. That's what I see this health care bill as.
Mm-hmm.
We'll mix these two together.
What does the socialist do?
The socialist says, oh, pour out that dirty water. Water this plant over here. And I'll give you half of mine, and then together we'll go drill a well.
Okay, hold on a minute. Got to do a break. Hold on, Bob. You know the before the hour, we're talking with Bob in Tennessee.
Hey, Mike.
All right, go ahead. Where were we?
I just told a little story there, but I've got something here. I don't know, Mike. I'm so upset. I feel like Nina Simone. You know, we're kind of distracted now with three major crises going on at the same time.
Yeah, well, what do you mean about Nina Simone? She's a singer. What'd she do?
She sang...
I Love You, Porgy.
Mississippi Goddamn.
Oh. Okay. Well, I asked.
Tennessee's got me so upset.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. We're distracted by health care. We're distracted by financial collapse. and we're distracted by war in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
and we're worrying about an escalation of the war in Afghanistan, and we haven't been thinking about Iraq. And as a matter of fact, most people say, well, at least Obama's keeping that promise. It says in the Harper's Index, I know you read Harper's Magazine. It's a great magazine.
Yeah, oh yeah, subscribe to it.
In the December issue, percentage change since President Obama's inauguration in the number of U.S. troops in Iraq, minus 16. Seems like he's keeping a promise, 16% withdrawn from Iraq. Uh-oh, what's this next sentence in the Harper's Index? Percentage change in the number of armed private contractors working for the United States there.
Right.
Plus 52%.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, you can do the math. I think we had about the same number of mercenaries there as we had troops. So if he took out 16%,
mm-hmm.
put in 52%, I think that's not a withdrawal. It's a replacement. It's an escalation in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that a little scenario that we devised for a sci-fi movie one time of a year or so ago, when we talked about the big picture and the big plan of the right, talked about eventually the only jobs that would remain would be domestic servants and military. But it seems like the contractors, the corporate state, already has its army, and it's building it. And those soldiers that they have in the corporate army are costing us taxpayers, what, 10 times what a regular soldier gets?
Yeah, probably so. Plus, you know what I heard the other day, Bob, and I want to move on because I want to get one more caller in here, was that every soldier in Afghanistan for a year costs $1 million, U.S. tax dollars. That's just for the soldier. $1 million a month. Or is it a week? No, $1 million a month. I believe that's the right number. And it was compared to rebuilding the infrastructure of Afghanistan, how far that would go. And I read this and I thought to myself, what the hell are we rebuilding the infrastructure of Afghanistan? It was Soviets who blew it all to hell. We need to get out of there. We need to come home. We need to stop this madness. All right, Bob. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Ron is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir.
Good. I want to tell you, night before last, when you were talking about having to put your cat down.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you what, I was sitting here bawling like a baby.
Really? Yeah, it's, you know, you have a family member, even if it's, especially if it's an animal, because, you know, the animal has no idea, doesn't have a chance to say goodbye. You know, it's just.
I had to do it twice.
Yeah, it's.
But I have a quote for you.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard of John Stuart Mill. He was a philosopher.
Right.
It says conservatives are not necessarily stupid, but most stupid people are conservative.
Yeah, right. I've seen that before. Yeah, I've seen that.
I'm thinking, boy, it's never been truer than it is today.
That nails it. That really does nail it.
And the other one is Sinclair Lewis, when he says that if fascism comes to the United States, he'll come
right
in the flag and
carrying a Bible.
Does that sound like Sarah Palin to you?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, one of my favorites, as long as we're doing quotes here, I think this was Voltaire. Anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, here we are. Yeah, Sarah Palin. I've never seen anything like Sarah Palin. Like I said the other night, all these white Republican males love her because she got a great ass, and their wives don't. And they look at Sarah Palin and go,
you remember Ann Coulter always says that, progressive women and Democrats are all a bunch of ugly pie wagons and the conservative women are hot?
Yeah, well.
Ann Coulter shouldn't be talking, but that's.
No, you got that right. No, Ann Coulter ought to. Whatever happened to her? Is she out killing Muslims? She want to invade countries and overthrow their governments and kill Muslims or convert them to Christianity, which is exactly what the Roman Church did. Back during the nasty Inquisition.
Yeah, she's been sort of pushed to the lot by Sarah Palin and Michelle Malkin and that other crazy woman from Minnesota.
Bachman,
because she's too skinny now, I think.
Every time I hear her name, I think of Bachman Turner Overdrive. Hey, I got to go. Thanks, Ron.
Have a good night.
All right, man. You too. Appreciate it. That was not a sexist conversation. I'm sorry. I know I got a lot of women listeners who think I'm an incipient sexist anyway because I, you know, didn't support Hillary. But no, these are not sexist comments. These are comments from the realm of reality. There's not a Republican male out there, and I shouldn't say Republican white male because that's a double redundancy. But there's not a Republican male out there who doesn't look at Sarah and think he's got a chance. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it goes. Oh, Mike, you're being sexist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.